The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/guardian.
Football Weekly Extra listeners, bigging up the League Cup on a midweek of shocks and taking a mighty look forward to the Premier League this weekend. Will West Ham go top? And in a week that saw police close Anfield when a man went missing, will they have to do the same thing at Selhurst Park if Rooney plays on Saturday? Boom, boom. There's Scottish news, Italian news, Finnish news as well, and much, much more in this Football Weekly Extra. Yes, indeed, everybody. A very exciting Football Weekly Extra lined up for you today with the vocal talents of James Horncastle.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hello, James. Barry Glendening's here as well.
Hello.
Look out, Australia. He's heading your way. And Paul Doyle. Paul, how are you? Welcome back.
Good, James. How are you?
Oh, you're rubbing your eyes.
Yes, like, I am. Yes, sorry. Like, I didn't sleep last night.
Why, Paul?
Well, perhaps it was excitement at returning to the pod.
Perhaps it was. Or maybe something else.
Maybe something else, yeah.
All right. Tell you what, if you feel yourself nodding off, here's my advice.
Yeah?
Chew something. This goes for you as well, listeners. Apparently, if you're nodding off, you should chew something because you can't fall asleep while you're chewing. Did you know that?
I don't believe it. I think you can fall asleep while you're chewing, but you can't chew while you're asleep.
I'm a dialer on this one.
Really?
Yeah, I think you're wrong.
Okay. We'll have to devise some test. If only there was something that was going to put many people to sleep. League Cup. Here's Elliot Gibbons saying, how much did this week's disastrous results damage the Premier League's Capital One Cup coefficient? It's a good question, isn't it? Were they that much of a surprise? Were they that disastrous? They were fairly disastrous, were they, James? The League One, the League Cup results?
Well, all the London clubs are out.
Yeah.
Pretty disastrous, I suppose. Mm. But Man City's still looking very good to retain the trophy, so.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. So let's pick one or a couple of those games. The Liverpool win and the Chelsea loss. Yet another defeat for Chelsea, but that precious first win for Jurgen Klopp. Guy Morgan says, has anyone made a he's clopped his cherries joke yet? No, I believe you're the first, Guy. So, and they're going to face each other at Stamford Bridge this weekend.
In days gone by.
Mm.
This would have been where Jose Mourinho very much strode to the fore and asserted himself as the boss of the Premier League in the face of a new pretender coming in from abroad. It'll be interesting to see whether he can summon that the appetite to do that on Saturday and whether his players can.
Right. Well, Chelsea's problems are manifest and well documented. Do Liverpool have what it takes, which, as I understand it, is essentially someone a little bit nippy on the wings, to hand Chelsea yet more woes?
Well, Klopp did very well against Mourinho when Dortmund played against Real Madrid. Seemed to have his number.
Right. Were all his strikers injured that time or not?
No. He famously had Robin Lewandowski, who scored four in one game. But, yeah.
Christian Benteke will be back.
Oh, will he be back?
And could perhaps do what Andy Carroll did to them last week.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Will he be back? Because what I had seen was that he was unlikely to be there with that.
Okay. Well, the latest murmurings are that he should be okay.
Okay.
Yeah. But that both strikers, Costa and Benteke, are doubtfuls for this game. But, Klopp had written on the dressing room whiteboard at Anfield, terrible, which many Liverpool players perhaps thought, oh, does he really think that's what we've been performing like? But no, that was what the experience, he was saying, would be like for opponents to play Liverpool over the coming months.
Right.
That's the prowess this Liverpool team is going to show under him.
Well, getting this 1-0 win then against Bournemouth, do you see that? Is that the first little bit of traction from the... You were just beginning to roll down the track now, the big Klopp juggernaut.
I mean, there are some encouraging signs in that game from Liverpool, in that even with all the injuries, it was quite bold of him to gamble on some of the young players that came through. Teixeira was quite audacious in almost scoring, and then Klein did get that goal. But you do wonder about Liverpool, that kind of absence of creativity, which maybe Firmino might supply.
Well, yeah, did you see that lovely little nutmeg he did?
Mm.
That little stop and nutmeg. What do you think, Barry?
Well, I think a lot of people are probably expecting Liverpool to win this quite easily, given Chelsea's assorted woes and, you know, the detraction you speak of, in so much as, you know, a 1-0 win against Bournemouth by your second team is going to give you any kind of traction. But Liverpool's record against Chelsea in recent times isn't good. Their record in London isn't good. And I suppose it depends on how much value you put in recent form or events of the not-too-distant past, on whether or not that'll be a factor on Saturday. But, yeah, certainly I would fancy Liverpool to win the game. But,
really?
I'm not sure, you know, how confident I would be that they will.
Mm.
I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that perhaps some are suggesting it may be.
Right. Klopp, after the victory in midweek, certainly doing his best to fit in, telling everybody at Liverpool to calm down. not get too excited. But where it would a defeat this weekend leave Mourinho after all the rumours of this week?
It depends on the performance, doesn't it, rather than the result. As long as there's another a better display.
Right.
They were better against Stoke. They were just a little bit luckless, a little bit hapless. If they can improve on the performance, whether they lose or not, I suppose that might save him.
Yeah. I hope he doesn't get sacked.
Right.
Simply because I'd like him to be around if Arsene Wenger wins the title. the hour of Wenger's great vindication coinciding with Mourinho's unravelling.
I think word would reach him anyway, but yes. All right. Well, when he was sacked last time, they were fifth, Chelsea, and 2 points off the top. This time they are 15th, 11 behind City, and they're 9 points off the Champions League places. Wow. It's going to be a big game, that's early on Saturday. A lot of attention for that. In League Cup terms, one or two other interesting results. Saints beat Villa. Still waiting for word on Villa's new boss. Is that right, Paul?
Yes, I believe, yeah. Good to see Saints, though, progressing in the cup, because that has to be a trophy that they have a realistic chance of winning. And would atone for their Europa League disgrace if they
that is true.
And they will play Liverpool in the quarterfinals.
They will, James, that's true. Man City will be taking on Hull, who went past Leicester on penalties. Borough, who knocked out Man U on penalties, we'll come on to that game in a second, will be hosting Everton, who beat Norwich on penalties. A lot of penalties this midweek. Huh. And then you got
was quite funny, actually, on Tuesday night. You know where they have in the Sky Studio the various old pros watching a game, and they were trying to cover three separate penalty shootouts simultaneously, and it was all getting very, very confusing for all concerned, those providing the information and those of us at home trying to digest it.
Indeed. Well, let me just tell you then, Barry, that also in the quarterfinals are Stoke, who put out Chelsea on penalties, and Sheffield Wednesday, who beat Arsenal fair and square. No totty, no party. There's some love for Wednesday, please, before the inevitable Arsenal bashing, because they put in a clinical show and a perfect game plan despite Arsenal's attitude. What's he mean, Barry?
I'm not sure what he means.
What, Arsenal putting out... What, did they take a very negative approach?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, they were soundly beaten, but I don't think they'll care.
Seven first-teamers in Wenger's lineup.
I think the attitude he refers to is that the young players didn't look up to it. They looked a little bit raw. And the experienced players looked like they didn't really want to play. Like Giroud, I think, when he started, was kind of thinking, oh, this means I'm not going to be starting at the weekend. It all unfolded quite disastrously with that.
Did he improve then after Walcott got injured?
Perhaps, yeah. But that was disastrous for Wenger to, you know, bring on Walcott, having him not warmed up for Oxlade-Chamberlain, and then him to pull up after taking a corner, was it?
What's the prognosis for those two pacey young fellas?
The prognosis is they're both expected to miss three games.
Right.
Which will leave Arsenal quite short on the right-hand side, I suppose.
Mm. Did we give Wednesday love?
No, we didn't give Wednesday. I was about to say we haven't given Wednesday no love whatsoever. We went straight to the Arsenal, inevitable Arsenal bashing. Wednesday, kind of a team that just, I don't know about anyone else, they kind of slipped off my radar completely, you know. You've got this Portuguese manager in, Carlos Carvalho.
That's him.
That's the man. Mm. You know, I remember a time not so long ago, they were playing Arsenal in cup finals every week. And, you know, Steve Morrow was hoisted onto Tony Adams's shoulder after one such match, fell over, broke his collarbone and missed a subsequent final against Sheffield Wednesday. Again, these were weekly events, these cup finals. And there were 35,000, I think, at Hillsborough for that game against Arsenal the other night, which is the biggest crowd they've had in quite some time. They seem to be a club on the up. I think automatic promotion will be probably be beyond them this season, but they are certainly, you know, one of many clubs hoping to get into the playoffs. And yeah, it'd be nice to see them back. They are very much an English football institution who we've kind of forgotten about, I suppose.
Largely because of the anti-Wednesday bias that John Ashton propagates.
Well, yes, of course. He's probably the only person who wasn't impressed to see. You know, it's weird because that game, Ross Wallace was man of the match. I'd completely forgotten he even existed as a footballer, you know. You didn't even know
who he is. No, I didn't. Oh, he used to play for Rangers, of course. Yeah. That Ross Wallace. Well, we're talking about Rangers later on, aren't we? You're fit by corner, are we, or not?
We can if you want.
No, I don't particularly need to. Anyway, richly deserved this win then for Wednesday.
Oh, no, there were. I mean, three good goals. They thoroughly outplayed Arsenal. But the only thing is that their achievement is probably a bit devalued by the fact that Arsenal don't really seem to be in the Arsenal or their fans don't seem to be in the slightest bit bothered that they're out of this competition, and will probably see it more as a blessing than anything else.
Well, they may feel they have bigger fish to fry, but to what extent will their league, and indeed their Champions League prospects, because it's return of midweek Euro competition next week, be harmed by the absence of both Ox and Walcott? Because you've got Swansea away this weekend. They lost both times against Swansea last season. And then, a trip to the Allianz Arena coming up next, what is that, Wednesday?
That's right. And Spurs after that, I believe.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So poor timing. But I guess this is where Arsenal's strength and depth will come to the fore. The strength and depth that they showed in the League Cup, for example.
Yeah. Fantastic.
But Flamini, I guess, will come back into the starting lineup. And well-timed for another North London derby, given his earlier heroics this season.
Is there a case for moving Hector Bellerin up to midfield?
Creator of more chances than anybody in that Arsenal side.
Yeah, and they could turn him into the sort of Gareth Bale, you know, the second coming.
Right.
I saw some Arsenal fans complaining about Serge Gnabry being sent on loan to West Brom under Tony Pulis, who's done actually really well on that right-hand side when playing for Arsenal, but he's only played 12 minutes for West Brom so far this season. So. Ooh.
Tony Pulis said he isn't up to it, that he's just not good enough so far. He hasn't showed in training that he's good enough to play for West Brom. So, which is quite a damning indictment, you'd have to say.
No James McLean.
Well, do you want to call this anyone?
I mean, the Swans got a win against Villa, but I suppose that's not great stuff, is it really? Anyone's getting a win against Villa these days. Bavatimbi Gomez still hasn't scored for a long, long time now, has he? Going back to was it the United game. I still think Swansea are kind of maybe struggling in transition in their mentality from being an underdog for a lot of the time that they spent in the Premier League. Then they have their best finish last season, really good start, and you know, maybe they think they're too good for a period.
Are they, the way they play football, are they a good team for Arsenal to be playing?
Well, certainly if they play when they have played badly this season, because they've been uncharacteristically ponderous in a lot of games. It hasn't, the crisp passing for which they've become renowned in recent years has been absent in a lot of their matches. And they've been ponderous and imprecise even. And there's a real lack of width, because after his fine early showing in the season, Montero has completely dropped off in terms of form, and they don't have much from the fullbacks.
Right, I'm just thinking, because you mentioned Bellerin, he'll be very much occupying his area of the field.
Yeah,
you really did miss last night, didn't you? That's it for part one. We're going to gather our thoughts about some of the other exciting clashes in prospect after this. City Norwich, everyone. City, that's 2-5-1 victories in a row they've had.
And they're coming up against a team that's yet to keep a clean sheet so far this season. Yeah. So I think it's going to be painful.
Do you know what? Last time they met at the Etihad, that was in 2013, it was 7-0 to City.
Ah, yeah. Really?
And so even though Aguero's out of the picture, you probably feel reasonably confident from City's point of view, would you, Barry?
I would, yeah. I'm not sure Norwich fans will appreciate you referring to the other team in that fixture as City throughout.
Oh, that's true. They're both cities, aren't they? Yeah. That's lazy.
Lazy David, journalism.
David Silva's 50-50 to come back for Man City, I read.
Yeah, and the worrying thing, I suppose, for the rivals is they haven't really missed him that much, have they, despite all he brings to the party. I would fancy Manchester City to win that particular game, but Norwich on their day are a very good team. Mm. But they are prone to some horrendous performances when they're not on their day.
Defensively, Norwich are weak.
They're particularly in the heart of their defence. That was certainly earmarked as a position of weakness before the season even started, and they haven't really done much to suggest
they've improved
it. It's no longer a problem. Mm.
So. Just a quick correction. I happily said at the start of this that they'd had 2-5-1s in a row, but of course they had that 0-0 with Man United, which I somehow managed to forget.
Really? Yeah.
Well done, me. What about Man United's prospects then as they travel to Crystal Palace? A lot of people being rude about Wayne Rooney again this midweek. It just goes on and on. As somebody was asking, and I've chopped their name off, isn't the lack of creativity at Man United beyond just Rooney's poor form? Lawan Hawizi says, for example, another poor performance from Carrick. He needs so much space and time on the ball, Stephen Hawking is going to write a book on him. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, Memphis hasn't been delivering either after a fairly bright start with them. He's been criticised for having a party boy lifestyle, and
oh, really?
I don't know if that's affecting his performances or not, but he certainly isn't delivering the goods. The form of Rooney, he's just gone off a cliff, and it will be intriguing to see how bad he has to get before Louis van Gaal will consider dropping him. It's almost as if he's just keeping him in the side now out of just pure mule-headed stubbornness because everyone else is telling him he shouldn't be in the side. I mean,
He did keep him out of the starting lineup midweek, but then brought him on
to miss a penalty.
Yeah,
but yeah. I think most people would like to see Van Gaal go with Herrera in midfield because he gives you that. He makes those runs into the box, can also make things happen with the ball at his feet. Maybe Memphis out wide, give him a run of games in the team again, see if he can build some of his confidence after spending that money that they did on him. Martial through the middle. And all of a sudden you've got pace, creativity, and his handling of Mata recently has been a little bit suspicious because he keeps taking him off for Lingard or starting Lingard in favour of him. And again, he's someone who makes stuff happen. So, yeah, but no doubt Rooney will start again this weekend.
Mm. Will he get a shot, do you think, this time?
Or a touch in the box,
I don't know. A touch in the box, yeah. What about Palace, who I believe will have Dwight Gayle returning from suspension?
Could be a 0-0 because, I mean, they've struggled for goals. They've only scored 4 in the last 6, and only one of those has been from open play. The rest have been goodbye penalties. They've been missing Connor Wickham, Marouane Chamakh. As you said, Gayle, even when he's played, he hasn't really shown the form of last season. And Glenn Murray, who finished last season really well, scoring 6 in the last 6 games, is now at Bournemouth. So until those players come back, it's tricky.
It is.
It's quite puzzling, actually, the situation at Palace, because Chamakh is out, Wickham is injured as well. So Dwight Gayle started for them against West Ham and got sent off. So I thought, right, well, Patrick Bamford's still there. He'll get in now. But no, last week it was Fraser Campbell started in place of the suspended Dwight Gayle. And you're kind of wondering, what has happened to Patrick Bamford? Does Pardew just not fancy him at all? Is he training badly? Because there was talk a few weeks ago that Chelsea might take him back from his loan spell because he wasn't getting the Premier League experience they wanted him to be getting. But if he's so far down the pecking order at Palace, and sort of last season everyone was bigging him up as this, you know, emerging superstar, just curious to know, and I don't have any answers, but perhaps Palace fans might know better than I do that what has happened to Patrick Bamford.
Well, it's a mystery. It's a mystery. Here's a question I'm going to be focusing on this weekend. Can the clean sheet Kings end Jamie Vardy's goal run? You'll recall that Jamie scored in his last 7 games. Is it 10 all in all this season? I think it is. But he's up against a West Brom side that's put together 5 clean sheets, the Sports, in their last 7 matches.
I mean, it's almost a clash of good versus evil.
It is, isn't it?
Because West Brom are appalling.
Yeah.
It's like Tony Pulis feels he let himself down at Crystal Palace by playing with a degree of panache. And now he's out to redeem himself by boring the arse of everyone.
Right.
Because they're wretched to watch, in fairness.
Will Leicester be able to spread a little light there, do you think, at the Hawthorns?
Yeah, I hope so. They'll certainly go for it because they play with joyous abandon, don't they?
Mm.
And they're not solid at the back at all.
Indeed not.
I'm going to tentatively, against my better judgment, stick up for West Brom a bit here. Just, I think their performance against Norwich last week was definitely their most impressive, probably, of recent memory under Pulis, you know. Compared to the, I'm still tortured in my sleep by the memories of their game against Crystal Palace, which was just shocking. It was genuinely heart-rending to see a team so bad play in the Premier League. But and I say this as a fan of Sunderland, you know, so I know of what I speak. But it was really revelatory. So they have improved a bit since then, to give them a small bit of credit, which they deserve.
PIP asks, can the likes of Leicester maintain their form over Christmas and reach the top 6/4?
No.
Do you want to include, say, Palace in that area and West Ham too? Is there one of them that looks likely or looks the likeliest to be able to pull off something like that?
I would say West Ham, probably. Mm. If they can keep Dimitri Payet fit and he stays in form, they do look a real proposition. But the worry, you know, it would be great to see teams like that.
They could go top this weekend, you know, the Hammers.
Could they, yeah?
They could go top. They're at West Ham. They're at Watford, which is a little bit like a derby-ish. And West Ham won all 3 derbies that they've played so far this season. They've beaten Chelsea, Arsenal and Palace. Watford were impressive against Stoke. Ooh, Troy Deeney ended that long run of only Ighalo scoring. And they've also got the second meanest defence in the league. But West Ham they're on fire, aren't they?
Yeah, and they've, you know, the return to fitness of Andy Carroll is a big boost for them to have him on the bench once, you know, you've softened up the central defenders, send on the big man. Quite intriguingly, it was an interesting story that after West Ham's game last weekend, Andy Carroll was attacked by a drunken Chelsea fan in a Canary Wharf restaurant.
Really?
Mm. And I don't think there was too much malice in it.
A friendly attack,
yeah. in which the slightly over-exuberant Chelsea fan attempted to kiss him, I think.
Ah.
And wine was thrown and perhaps a table was overturned. But the aspect of the story that particularly grabbed my attention was the fact that this drunk Chelsea fan was removed from the premises by Andy Carroll's personal security guards.
Oh, right.
So Andy Carroll has a security team.
Sounds like he needs one.
Well, he's always taken care of himself previously, hasn't he?
Well, unless Kevin Nolan was... It could actually be Kevin Nolan, because he's out of a gig at the moment, isn't he? But they didn't mention that it was Kevin Nolan, so I'm presuming, yeah, that Andy Carroll gets followed around by, like, a pair of goons with earpieces. It does, doesn't it?
But you know what? That's the game today.
And particularly, he's strike you as the one player who wouldn't actually need them because he'd be well able to handle himself.
Yeah. Well, maybe they're there to keep him from himself, as it were. To protect him from his own dark side. we've got more matches from the weekend to talk about. No doubt full of similarly fascinating aspects. Newcastle Stoke, there you go, they're both looking to bounce back. Colaccini's going to be available after his red card was overturned. That's a surprise, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Why did they overturn that red card?
Well, I didn't think it should have been a red card, to be honest.
Okay.
My first impression was that it perhaps shouldn't even have been a penalty, but then having seen it again, I thought, yeah, definite penalty, charged him off the ball. But I don't think it was... assuming he got it for preventing a clear goal-scoring opportunity, A, Sunderland don't tend to get clear goal-scoring opportunities. B, Stephen Fletcher certainly doesn't get clear goal-scoring opportunities. And C, I just don't think, no matter what striker was in that position, it was a clear goal-scoring opportunity.
All right, well, that's why they're
running away from goal.
So, all right, Newcastle Stoke then. Barry, what do you think?
God.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a hard one to call.
Would you like to call Everton Sunderland instead? That's Sunday lunchtime game, but it won't feature Phil Jagielka, who's become another high-profile injury. 8 weeks he's going to be out, just as Everton come up against a Sunderland side fresh from a mighty 3-0 win in their derby clash.
I don't have the figures to hand, but I have a feeling from mentioning this on a previous podcast, and I could be wrong, but I don't think I am, that Sunderland's record after their now traditional gubbing of Newcastle in their following game is not good.
Not good.
No.
All right.
Well, so, Allardyce has placed the emphasis on solidity, given how poor Sunderland were earlier in the season. And although they scored 3 goals against Newcastle last week, he may revert to that at Goodison Park, which might be a mistake, because Everton look like they could be vulnerable at the back, obviously, with Jagielka out and with Martinez still not having convinced that he can build a solid defence.
Mm. What's the game you're most looking forward to this weekend, Paul?
Leicester-West Brom.
Right.
For the sake of what's at stake. I'm going to Swansea-Arsenal.
Are you?
So I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Well, that's usually a nice trip. I mean, it's a long way to go, but it's usually rewarding.
Yeah.
Right. You've got a South Coast derby. You could have said Saints against Bournemouth.
Yeah, that is
very
an
polite,
interesting
one.
First top flight derby ever between them.
Is that right?
Because Bournemouth haven't been in the top flight.
That makes sense. What will Arta Boric be playing, and what craziness will he come up with this time?
I don't know, because Federici did well during the week at Liverpool,
right.
and Boric hasn't been doing well recently, so there's a good case for dropping him. But the other Arta, Harry Arta, could be playing, and it's great to see him back, because they've missed him, and he'll add some
Will that be his first appearance, or did he make a cameo?
He played during the week at Liverpool.
Okay, good.
But I think, and I'm saying this off the top of my head, that this will be his first Premier League start.
Right.
And he'll restore some steel and dynamism to midfield, which is needed. But they're still missing their striker, their injured striker up front. His name momentarily escapes.
Callum Wilson?
That's the man.
Yeah.
And,
Gradle and Mings.
So, and Southampton, you would expect to win. Mane served his suspension during the week.
Right.
And they should probably have too much for Bournemouth.
Okay. That could put Bournemouth in the bottom three, particularly if Villa go and get a win at Spurs. That's Monday night's game. Of course, many question marks over this, not least... Who's going to be in charge of Villa when it comes round? At the moment, Kevin McDonald's doing the interim business. Because Philippe was assuring us that Remy Garb would be in place by now, but it looks like there's been a bit of a hold-up there.
Yeah, I think he's been endeavouring to get his assistants that worked with him at Lyon to come on board, which has been more problematic than first anticipated.
Assorted French people have said that Remy Garb's a great fit for Aston Villa in a positive way. What's your take on him, Paul?
Yeah, he did well at Lyon, where he probably had better materials with which to work. And it's a difficult situation to walk into. I personally think they got rid of Sherwood a bit too early.
You were enjoying that, were you?
Well, he lost all his best players during the summer, had 13 new ones parachuted in, and didn't manage to make an immediate success of it. But it seemed very harsh to judge him that quickly. Then again, I'm all for judging managers quickly in the Premier League. So, bring on Gard and let's see what he does.
Yep, or whoever gets it. Spurs.
Dwight York has thrown his hat in the
ring. Oh, he did, didn't he? Mm. Spurs have the best events in the league and have been beaten only once all season. So they're looking good. Better than Villa. And that is where we bring to an end our little Premier League roundup. But there's plenty more for us to be discussing today in this Football Weekly Extra.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Their designer templates let you easily create a unique and beautiful website that looks perfect on any device. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
Very shortly we'll be going to our Scottish football correspondent and then later still to our Serie A correspondent. But let me just inform you, exciting news for fans in Birmingham who already have a ticket to Football Weekly Live. It's only 2 weeks away. The rest of you, I'm afraid, no more tickets available. They're all gone. Warned you. But the good news is that not far away in London, we'll be doing a special pre-Christmas show at London's Logan Hall. And that's on the 2nd of December. We'll announce the rest of the panel next week. But apparently Barney Roney's going to be there, eating up valuable resources. It's going to be very, very sexy, says producer Ben. But you can get full details at theguardian.com/Guardian Live. Wow. Tell you what, when we promote, we promote. Interesting to see what we would have done with the 2018 World Cup, sorting that out for FIFA. They did a pretty good job of it themselves, didn't they? Sepp Blatter, with his revelations this week. I say revelations, but Owen Gibson tweeting, no one left Zurich in December 2010 with any other impression that the decision had been made long before the vote and that the Three Lions were mere kittens. Owen, who's been almost camped out in Zurich for the duration of you know, FIFA Gate. He's having a day off today because it's half term. But what were your thoughts? Were you shocked by Sepp Blatter coming out with his...
I wasn't shocked by the revelation that the result of the vote, inverted commas, was preordained. I was more shocked by the fact that Sepp Blatter seemed to be completely oblivious to the fact that revealing this was no big deal.
Yeah, he just did.
The man doesn't live on the same planet as the rest of us.
If God is with him, he'll be back.
He's just toying and teasing the authorities. He's revealing it knowing that they can't find evidence.
And also, he then points...
It has been destroyed.
And he also used it to point the finger again at Platini. So perhaps there's an anti-Platini subtext in this. He says that everything was sorted out to have Russia and then the USA before Platini came in with his Qatar nonsense. And says Blatter, if the USA had been given the World Cup, we'd only speak about the wonderful World Cup 2018 in Russia, and we would not speak about any problems at FIFA. Yeah, that was the problem. Right there. But luckily, they've got 8 spanking new candidates to clean the whole thing up.
See, even Gianni Infantini has been wheeled out.
He certainly has.
It's a big step up from being the official UEFA bingo caller.
Well... He says, has he not said that he's willing to step aside if Platini is able to clear himself? Well, I mean, it's there's proper and well documented outrage at the various candidates available elsewhere on the Guardian. Marina Hyde and Owen.
Yeah, Marina Hyde and Owen are all over it, and it's great reading their stuff.
Let's move on then to one or two other little excitements. Did you see Anfield Stadium evacuated following security concerns with a? Man went, did you not see this?
No.
A man was on a tour of the ground, a man went missing, so they evacuated the entire place over security concerns. Did you also see, on a similar note, the Barnsley fan, basically, who was trapped inside the ground after he went to sleep on the toilet? Did you see this?
Has he been chewing, maybe?
He wasn't chewing. Or maybe he had been, I don't know. Yeah, Barnsley Fire Station spokesperson said, we had to get the ladder to get him down because they found him on top of a building without his shoes, his mobile phone or his hat. He was more bothered about his hat, though, said the fireman. He seemed a smartly dressed lad. The man told emergency services he had a few beers and went to the toilet. The next thing he could remember was waking up 7 hours later. They'd lost 1-0 to Fleetwood Town in the meantime. Extraordinary story, that.
John Ashdown got locked into...
Oh, he did, didn't he?
Loftus Road one night. I was locked into Craven Cottage.
Right.
A pal of mine fell asleep in the toilets of the Artesian Well in Battersea and woke up the next day.
Really?
Yeah. Nightclub, completely empty, so he helped himself to some more drinks.
Fine work. Keke Mlari says, AC Jimmy, no Football Weekly mention of Seinäjoki, who had crowned Finnish champions... on Sunday, ending Helsinki's six-year winning run. I'm not sure, Kiki, you want us to mention your team, because do you remember what happened with Aberdeen after we mentioned there? Hermiston pointing out they've not won a single game since we did our fact about Aberdeen.
What was the team? Who were the new Finnish champions?
Seinäjoki.
That's now completely almost doubled my knowledge of Finnish football.
Right.
Which hitherto was Jari Litmanen.
There you go. Hermansson, anyway, he asks if there's any way we can reverse the curse. Maybe, Barry, if you were to do a Fit Bar Corner now, mentioning interesting facts about every other team in the SPL.
Well, actually, I don't have a monopoly on cursing Aberdeen. Just for anyone who is unaware, I think it was 20th September, Aberdeen beat Hearts 3-1. That was their eighth consecutive Scottish Premiership win of the season. And we mentioned it on a subsequent Football Weekly. And since then, they have been beaten by Hibs in the League Cup. And they've also been beaten by Inverness, St Johnstone, Ross County in the League, and have recently drawn with Motherwell.
Hmm.
But they're still only 4 points behind Celtic.
Are they?
After 12 games, and they play Celtic this weekend.
Wow, okay.
So if they were to win this game, and all form suggests that they have no chance whatsoever, if they were to win this game, there'd only be a point in it. Even if they lost, it still wouldn't be beyond them. Although
7 points,
I think probably would be beyond them.
Okay.
But I mean, on a certain radio show I present with Max Rustin.
How coy of you.
We had former Dundee United manager Jackie McNamara on.
Right. Did they not get absolutely spanked by Celtic last weekend?
Well, that's the thing. We got Jackie McNamara to promise Dundee United fans that he would win a trophy this season. And they proceeded, I think, to lose every single game they played since we interviewed him. And he's since got the sack. Miksu Patilainen is in instead of him.
Right.
And
is he Finnish?
Yes.
He is Finnish, indeed he is. Miksu Patilainen is in instead of him. And they got trounced by Celtic last weekend. And Miksu Patilainen basically came out and said all his players are absolute garbage. Which is probably not a great way to ingratiate yourself upon your new minions when you come into a club.
Mm.
So yeah, I've managed to put the hex on Aberdeen and Dundee United so far this season. So probably a good time to mention that Rangers have won 11 matches in a row.
Yeah,
look, an unstoppable force in the Championship
under Mark Warburton,
formerly of Brentford.
Yeah, there's not been any suggestion of him coming across to say take over at Villa, is there?
Not that I've heard.
He's presumably quite happy where he is at the moment.
I'd imagine so, yeah. It's just Rangers have won 11 in a row. They play Hibs next. They're looking a good thing to get promoted back to the Scottish Premiership. But it's just looking at their attendances.
Hmm.
Game against Queen of the South at Ibrox, 44,000. Falkirk, 45,000. Livingston, just under 45,000. Raith Rovers, 44,000. And this is in a division where they're away games, and you presume they're the biggest draw in the league. They played Alba, 3,044, Ayr, 7,468, Airdrie, 7,006, Queen of the South, just under 6,000. So it's remarkable the crowds are getting in at Ibrox, despite their, you know, lowly status compared to what they once were.
Mm. Well, indeed. One can only guess what kind of numbers they'd be putting out if they're back in the same division as Celtic and playing them about eight times a season.
That'd be the same, I presume.
Yeah, exactly the same. That's capacity. Right. Paul Casey says, as it's Halloween, who is the scariest manager in the Premier League? Pellegrini looks like he might be a reanimated
corpse. Zombie.
Yeah, a zombie, effectively, yeah. Alex Neil, for me, there's an edge to him.
Jurgen Klopp. I wouldn't fancy, you know, if the shower scene in Psycho, he's the one I can most imagine
with the knife. Really? Yeah.
He's got a villain-like laugh, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Joachim Löw, who obviously isn't in the Premier League,
right.
But he's got kind of half, you can imagine him in the Rocky Horror Picture Show or something like
really?
That. Not that spooky.
In which part?
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Right.
Maybe just some extras standing there.
There you go.
On the subject of reanimated corpses.
Oh, yes.
You've seen Spectre, Jimbo.
Nicely done. Well, you've seen it as well, Barry.
Yeah. Two thumbs down from me.
Is that right? Mm. Yeah. I wasn't impressed, but I'm going to do it. I've done a little...
Oh, Jimbo Vision.
I've done a little review. It should be up on Jimbo Vision on YouTube a little bit later on Thursday. So thanks for asking. But yeah, I'm a bit bewildered at some of the reviews out there.
5 stars in The Guardian.
Hmm. Mysterious. James, you saw it with me on Monday. What did you think?
I was disappointed.
Hmm.
I tried to like it. There are lots of reasons why you could perhaps make a case for liking it.
Right.
But in the end, I didn't like it.
If you enjoyed Skyfall, I think it's probably fair to say you may well enjoy this. But if you felt Skyfall overindulgent, overlong, overserious, just not fun, then you're going to find the same things with this. It's probably even more Skyfall-y than Skyfall in that sense. Mm. Anyway, tell you what isn't any of those things is Serie A, which had a brilliant midweek.
Mm, it was magnificent.
Yeah.
It's one of the most balanced, unpredictable championships.
How tight is it at the top now? Yeah.
There are only, 2 points between the top four teams. And you've got someone like Sassuolo, who are up in fifth, and they beat Juventus.
First time ever.
Last night, for the first time ever. And Juventus in complete dire straits. They've already lost 4 of their 10 games. They've gone behind 6 times. No team has ever won the Scudetto from where they are. They're 11 points off the top. And even to get into the Champions League, they're 9 points adrift of that. And I think the only teams that have ever managed to get into the Champions League in Serie A history from that position are Parma and Lazio towards the end of the 90s. So it's looking difficult for them.
Somebody calling themselves Torres, a.k.a. El Lazy Mohawk, says, well, who's had a worse collapse, Mourinho's Chelsea or Allegri's Juve?
Well, I suppose Juventus have fallen from higher because they got into the Champions League final last year. They were close to doing the treble. And a lot of people have drawn comparisons between the fall of Juventus and Chelsea. I think the only similarity that they have is they both started pre-season a lot later than others, and so they kind of started the season half-baked. But Juventus, in contrast to Chelsea, lost major players in the summer, Tevez, Pirlo and Vidal. They did spend $127 million on new talent, but you know what was really evident last night is while all these new players are still kind of learning the ropes, if you like, learning what it means to be at Juventus, they can't cope without players like Marchisio and Khedira. That midfield, which is, as we say, lost Pirlo and Vidal, when it's just Pogba on his own, he looks alone. The other players beside him, Sturaro and Lemina, probably a little bit too young, too raw to take that responsibility. Yeah, it's difficult for them. They have the Turin derby on Saturday, which won't be easy because Torino have had a real upturn in fortunes in the last couple of years. Dare we say they might be missing out on the Champions League next year?
Wow, that's big. Unless they win the Champions League, of course, they're still in the running. They're top of their group, but only by 1 point now ahead of Man City, and they've got a trip to Mönchengladbach coming up. In other Italy news, because we had a full round of fixtures midweek, and then we got some very interesting ones. You mentioned the Turin derby this weekend. Not sure who are Bologna playing, because they've got Roberto Donadoni now in as their manager. They fired Delio Rossi.
Yeah, they did. And remember, Delio Rossi was fired from Fiorentina because he substituted Adam Ljajic and subsequently went about beating him up in the dugout. Well, it was Ljajic who offered the coup de grace for Delio Rossi in this game. He set up Mario Cardi to score the only goal of the game, which did for him, and sees Donadoni back in the game, which is good because I thought he did a great job at Parma. Took the season before last, he was very dignified last season when obviously they had all the financial problems, they went bankrupt, they were getting unpaid, and he didn't abandon ship, he went down with it. And good to see him back here.
Oh, also this weekend, Napoli, who are the form team, another victory for them midweek. They're going to be travelling to Genoa.
Fifth in the row, and Higuain, top scorer in the league, looking really on it, looking like one of the continent's best strikers. And they're playing brilliant football. I mean, real improvement from under Rafa Benitez, particularly because, with the exception of Pepe Reina and the right back, the defence is the same as the one that Benitez had. And Benitez just couldn't sort out, conceded more than 50 goals last year. And
Sarri saying this week, it's the same team.
Yeah. He's just a real breath of fresh air, Sarri. I mean, you know, he, for example, will say that, yeah, I'm not interested in the transfer market, buying players. That's someone else's job. You know, for the transfer market is the refuge of the weak. I'm here to coach and coach what I've got. And he's doing a brilliant job because they've got the balance just right, which is they're scoring a lot of goals like Roma are, but Roma always have a mistake in them, they'll give you a goal. Whereas Napoli don't look like they're going to do that at the moment.
So they're 2 points behind Roma in second place, alongside Fiorentina and Inter, who Roma will be facing. In a fascinating clash. That's Saturday night, isn't it? Yep. Gervinho with his sixth goal in seven games.
Yeah.
Conor Kelly pointing out, not bad for a bloke that was one private beach and a helicopter away from signing for Al Jazeera in the summer.
Yeah, and he was whistled on his first start for the club this season.
Just explain that story.
Well, Roma were trying to sell him because he had a very disappointing campaign last year, and he arranged to go to Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera wanted to sign him, but then he made some ludicrous demands, apparently, such as this private beach and a helicopter.
Is that ludicrous?
And unsurprisingly, even Al Jazeera said, no, thank you. So Garcia was stuck with him, but he's done really well. Scored, yeah, as you said, 6 in his last 7, 5 in his last 5. And yeah, they're really irresistible going forward, Roma. They look... yeah, I think the title race is between those top two there, Roma and Napoli.
Really? Mm. Inter, you don't factor that?
Well, Inter just continue to play ugly and win ugly. And they seem to do better in their last two games when they go down to 10 men. There's just a lot of baffling things about this Inter team. The only thing that's I'd say is a positive about them is that Inter, the last couple of years, have just been shambolic at the back, and they've got the best defence in the league at the moment. They have these towering players in midfield, Kondogbia, Melo and Guarin, but the flip side of that is none of those players are creative. And Icardi was going through a bit of a crisis. He got his third goal of the season against Bologna, and yeah, he was asked about it afterwards. He said, look, my goal scoring record this season isn't really that bad when you consider I probably only had 4 balls into the box and I've scored 3 goals. So
right.
So yeah, I mean, if they can unleash some attacking potential, they will challenge, but until that point, I'm not sure.
Okay, what about Milan, who are now just 5 points off the Champions League positions? They got their first clean sheet of the season midweek.
With the 16-year-old in goal.
With the 16-year-old in goal, yeah. Gigi Donnarumma.
Yeah, so he's the second youngest goalkeeper to make his debut in Serie A since.
Scary stat.
Go for it.
When they won their last Champions League 2007, he was 8. He was 8 in 2007, and he's now keeping goal in one of Europe's top divisions. Oh my word.
Yeah, so that was a reprieve for Mihailovic, who's coming under a lot of pressure with even though they beat Sassuolo at the weekend, Berlusconi chose to compliment the opposing manager rather than Mihailovic, and he'd had him round for dinner, him and Galliani, at the during the international break, and said, ha, I missed an opportunity to poison them both. So still sort of unrest and tension there, but he's bought himself a bit of time as Sinisa.
Mm.
Has this young Gigi forced his way into the team, or is it just out of necessity because they had nobody else?
Well, he's super hyped because, I mean, he's 16, but he's about 6'5". You know, he's a man-child. He's huge. And there was pressure, particularly in pre-season, for him not to start but to get a look in, at least in the cup games, because his agent is also the agent of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Mario Balotelli. Oh, yeah. Mino Arriola. So he's got a big reputation already. But Diego Lopez, who was probably one of Milan's best players last season, has thrown a few balls into the back of the net and made a few mistakes. But it's a bit of a risk to maybe miff your first choice goalkeeper, who had until this season been one of your best performers of late.
Mm. Tell you what, Barry, if you're curious to see Mr. Donnarumma in action, Then 7:45 Sunday night, he'll be, one imagines, the way things are going, he'll be between the posts for Milan against Lazio, who are also there up among the leading teams in Serie A. It's going to be a fascinating clash, that. And as usual, from 6:30, we'll play you all the goals and
will there be further discussion of Gervino's mooted private beach, which I'm finding very intriguing.
Well, we might find time for that. We'll probably also ask Raphael Honigstein all about this 28-year-old who's just been appointed as Hoffenheim's new manager, Julian Nagelsmann. Yeah.
Talking or about you could youngsters. Ask any Liverpool fans who all are authorities on Hoffenheim, as far as I can tell, or could tell during the summer.
Yep. Indeed. Right, well, that's it for today's show. We're all off to get dressed up in our Halloween gear, listeners, excitingly enough. But let me just give a quick mention to Captain's Armband, who makes a joke that I didn't understand, but only because I'm not finished Podcast Master by our very own producer, Ben Green. He says, I'm loving the book as well as a Steinberg mixing desk. I may get a Glendening microphone. Yeah, me neither. But anyway, Podcast Master has all the answers to that and so many other of your podcasting doubts, Barry. And you know, it's currently the 4,444th most popular book on Amazon. I'm just wondering what the 4,445th most popular book on Amazon is and how they must be feeling today. But anyway, that's it for today's Full Billy Extra. Many thanks to Barry, to producer Ben, Paul Doyle and James Horncastle. We'll be back Monday. Have a super weekend.